Cannon. The great ball opportunity here. It's in. It's Patrick McElhinney.
I'm feeling good.
Here's Hooven. And Hooven gets it.
I'm delighted to be back, yes.
This is tough.
Yeah, it is what it is.
And hello from Damien O'Mara. You're very welcome to the RTE Soccer Podcast. Long-time listener, first-time stand-in presenter, but here to guide me through it like a young centre-back making his debut alongside seasoned professionals. Alan Cawley, how are you?
Good afternoon, Damien.
Johnny MacDonald, it's great to see you. You're the young centre-half. And Anthony Pine. Gentlemen, Damien, how are you? You're welcome. Thank you very much for being with us. And I'm tempted in many ways to finish off the conversations we were having off-air because we would end up... Yeah, we could end up having the most interesting of podcasts. But soccer is going to be our primary focus over the next 45 minutes or so. We've an awful lot to get through. We will chat international squads, as named by Mick McCarthy last week. We've League of Ireland action to catch up on over the weekend, the European games as well. But we will start, as we always do, with our hits and misses. We're going to differ, Anthony, slightly on this one, because speaking completely impartially, obviously, my hit was going to be Bohemians and their record 10-1 win over UCD at the weekend. But you look at the flip side of it, it's one of your misses of the week, because it's hard from a UCD perspective.
It is, and I have sympathy for Colly O'Neill. I was just saying to you, Damien, I actually saw UCD, it's almost exactly a year ago since I watched them in Drogheda in United Park. They were on their way to win the First Division title, and they bet Drogheda 3-0. Conor Davis scored a hat-trick, but I loved watching them that night. They were just vibrant, progressive side, and I remember thinking, you know, if Colly keeps them together, they'll be all right. I think they'd be okay in the Premier Division, but they've lost. Since I actually went back and looked at the team sheet this morning, they had Neil Ferrugia, Gary O'Neill, Greg Stoggett, Davis, Darrell O'Connor. Yeah. You know, just before that, Georgie Kelly had left. Kelly, yeah. So, like, to lose that many players, it's impossible for them to keep churning out that type of quality. And I did have sympathy for them. I didn't see the game, so I don't know exactly what happened to them, because it was only 2-0 at half time. It just seemed to collapse in the second half. And look, no, fair play to Bowles. I mean, they have to go and capitalise on that. They add into the goal difference with Derry, so. But it was, I thought it was a lot of sympathy for Colly and the lads.
Either of you ever been part of a team that's either won by that margin or lost by that margin?
I can't say I've ever lost at that. I remember maybe when I was under 10 or something.
Yeah,
but not in senior level. No.
I played a European match with Dundalk and we lost out in Bulgaria. Levski Sofia, I'll never forget it. Yeah. And I remember turning to Neil Fenn after 30 seconds of the match. They won a corner, right? Literally after 30 seconds of the match. And it was roasting. I said to Fenny, this is going to be a long night. And it was 7-0. And this is no exaggeration. I say this to everyone. Had they beaten us 22-0 that night, we could have had no complaints. Mm. They absolutely battered us.
Bad preparation, Alan. Yeah.
But does this...
We had a good team.
Does this beg questions of the UCD and how UCD go about their business? Or is it just simply one of those freak results?
I totally can understand that, and it would have been my miss of the week as well, because...
I'm speaking in jest when I talk about it being one of my hits. Obviously, I'm a Bohemians fan. People would know that from listening to the radio programme over the years, but nobody wants to see a team beaten in the top flight of our domestic league by 10-1.
I don't think it looks good.
That group has been together, that UCD group has been together for the last 4 or 5 years. They're nearly all graduating. They're in, you know, some of them are in their fifth year, and some of them are doing masters and stuff. But they have lost all them players. And I just think they're going through that transition now with UCD, where they might have young freshers coming through. And in another year, it might take them another year or two to get going again.
The goalkeeper, I would differ slightly from the lads in the sense that I've watched a lot of UCD as well. And even though I was over at a game there only 2 or 3 weeks ago against Waterford, and they played really well on the night. They're great to watch. I've been over there loads, because it's always an entertaining night, because it's just all out attack from their point of view, and whoever they're playing against will invariably have plenty of chances as well. So it's always a good game to watch. But the one thing I always take away every single night I've gone to watch them is how open and naive they are. And they're always the same. And it was the same tonight against Waterford. I know they're trying to claw back points, but it was at 1-1, and they're just going gung-ho, gung-ho. A long ball over the top, and Waterford then got the winner. And I'm looking at the game the other night, Johnny, and in fairness, I know they're young players, but...
They're not that young anymore. No. The point I'm making is they've been together for four or five years.
But I just always feel, at 2-0 at half-time, once it hits 3, 4, 5,
it's contingency.
Surely at some point you say, look, limit the damage here, and we just shut up shop.
But they don't know how to do it, Alan.
They got beat 7 up in Tala a few weeks ago. Surely at that point, Colly goes in then and says, look, lads, we're never going to lose 7-0 again.
I can only try and give you the answer to that is because because that same team play in the Collingwood Cup in the colleges and the universities, and they don't lose any matches, and they only know one way to play, and that's how to attack. But they're not used to getting beaten, Alan. So, in the Premier Division,
they're used to getting beaten. So at what point, Johnny, quarter way into the season, midway into the season, three quarters, do you say, okay, I'm all for playing football, it's a lovely attractive brand, we're getting plenty of plaudits for it, but we're losing every week, so we need to shut up shop here,
they've lost 21 of their 28 games played. But does that not have to stem from the, okay, like I remember
the culture,
yeah, the philosophy.
I don't like philosophy. It's just the way you play. You attack and you defend, and then you lose and you win it back. There's so much crap going on in football about philosophies. I can't even spell philosophy.
You said culture. What's the difference between culture and philosophy?
You attack and you defend, and you win it back, and you lose it, and you take. And the same thing you're talking about. Sixes and eights and tens, midfielders are midfielders.
Yeah. Football
old style midfielders used to score goals, used to defend, used to tackle, used to be able to pass. Now they're all in boxes.
Yeah.
I can't pass the ball 40 yards because I'm beholden midfield. I just get it and win it back.
May I quote Bill Shankly to you about football being a simple game made complicated by people who should know better?
Everything has to be fashionable now, as Johnny says. You have to talk in a certain lingo or else you can't. But going back to the UCD thing, and I remember Collie was in with us after they got promoted, and he says he did try bringing in three or four lads from the outside, and he said that system didn't work, and I'm going to go with the lads that got me into the division. And we all thought, brilliant, that's so admirable. But I'm just thinking, at what point, you're losing 21 games out of 28, you're at the bottom of the table, do you say to yourself, okay, this is not working, we can't just go gung-ho every match, why don't we play, we go gung-ho against Finn Harps and against a couple of the lesser lights, but we're playing Dundalk and Bowes and Shamrock.
Collie is the only one who can answer that, in fairness, but then, the coaching staff.
But does this come back to what your barometer for success for UCD is this year, or what the barometer of success for UCD is? So, you know, is it a failure for them if they're relegated, or is their priority somewhere else?
Well, I think potentially they could get, as Johnny touched on there, they could get relegated, and in 2 years they could walk the first division again and then get the pick of the litter, cherry picked again. So it's a sort of cycle for them. They go on this cycle. So I don't know, how would they gauge success, that they keep producing players?
But the flip side of that is they did bring in some good players during the window, because there's a new academic year starting to, you know, quickly come down the tracks, and they were able to.
I played there, Damien, when I first started.
You were there, Alan.
When I first started off, and we had one of the best managers the league has ever seen, Paul Doolan. And he was trying to. Paul was always trying to progress it and move it forward and be professional as possible, and the club just didn't want that. Now I'm going back, that was what, 15, 18 years ago. I don't know what the culture is now, but to me, they've never wanted to move it forward.
But didn't the club actually suspend the goalkeeper recently?
Yeah,
an in-house suspension.
No, he's missing at the moment.
And then wasn't there trouble about him going away? There was a little bit of.
So like Collie could tell you here, I win the first division, but it's never going to get any better unless there's no interest, I don't think, in investing
as
in bringing
Anthony
in players.
As Anthony says, if someone
outside
puts their head up, they just get picked off.
There might have been a bit of needle there as well, Damien. The crowd would have been baying for blood, even at 4 or 5, you know, after the last
game.
After the Cairns, actually, that incident. And maybe, you know, on the night, the team just sort of, they wilted, and it just, the floodgates opened.
Do we need to give plaudits, though, to Bohemians?
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, 4 goals for Andre Wright.
Only in a couple of weeks. Yeah. He's finding his feet, yeah.
Mandriau's the player. He's been unbelievable all year, Damien. They'll do well to hold on to him. I think a lot of talk at the moment around Jack Byrne being the best player in the league, but I think Mandriau, he's more dynamic. He's slightly different. Jack is technically brilliant and great to watch, sees a pass, but there's something about Mandriau where he's just so sharp and elusive.
He travels really. Yeah. He reminds me of a Keith Fattie. When he picks the ball up, he can travel at speed. Yeah. He exploits space in front of him all the time at every opportunity. But he's a good physical size as well. You know, when I'm coming back, I might stand to him, but I think somebody will definitely take a chance on him.
Let's go for a positive. What's your hit this week, Anthony?
My hit is Jonathan Afolabi's move to Celtic, Ireland under-19 striker. He left Southampton earlier in the summer, so he was actually a free agent going to the under-19 European Championships. And anybody who watched that, he was fantastic for Ireland in that tournament. He was named on the team of the tournament. I watched them against France. He led the line against France, who were one of the best teams in that tournament. He was absolutely brilliant. He's very strong. He's pacey. He can hold the play up. I mean, he was isolated for a lot of that game, but especially in the second half, he caused them on his own a lot of problems.
One of the French centre-halves, Santi, because I was covering that game, one of the French centre-halves is valued at 40 million.
Yeah. And serious players.
And this
yeah.
lad, Afolabi, like France has the favourites for the tournament as well. And I couldn't believe, I'd love to speak to someone from Southampton as to the reason why this lad hasn't been or is not progressing, because they must have some talent in their U team. Because this fella, Johnny, I'm telling
I've
you,
seen him. Yeah,
he'll play with Celtic.
Yeah, yeah. I think so too.
He'll play with Celtic.
He's gone up there. There was a lot of interest. Like apparently, Villa, Palace, Newcastle all looked at him, clubs in the Championship. I think there was even. Interest in Spain and Russia.
Is he not the type of forward that can only play up top on his own? But I don't know whether he
can. I don't know, Johnny.
His link. What I've seen.
He reminded me. I tell you what he reminded me of: a better Lukaku, a young Lukaku, but has who has a touch as well.
Yeah.
Because as Anthony says that he was occupying, like he was on his own, occupying defenders, but he had a good touch, bringing fellas into the game. I'm not sure. I didn't see, never saw him with a partner. Would he be better? But I definitely think with the way Celtic are going at the moment and the Scottish football the way it is. He'll progress.
It's interesting the role that Neil Lennon and Celtic could play, though, in the development of, like, Luke O'Connell has gone there as well. Great things being spoken about.
If he's still there, Lennon.
If he's, well, Lennon will be there for a while.
Draw him with Dunfermline on Saturday after the European stuff.
Out of Europe. Well, not out of it, but.
Yeah, Lennon will be under pressure there.
Already?
Well, I don't know about pressure, but drawn after coming off the European thing, and then he played, he got slated because he played Callum McGregor left full last week, their best midfielder, in place of Tierney, because obviously the sole Tierney, and he got slated for that, and then they concede four goals against Cluj, then they go into the cup game against Dunfermline, who were a shambles, and to draw one all.
But do you not need to detach yourself from, you know, to look back and kind of, like, what is, again, back to the conversation we just had about UCD, what is success for Celtic? Like,
well, I
for
think
Celtic
you should have got through that tie.
For Celtic to reach the group, to reach the group stages of the Champions League
is an achievement.
It's like other clubs winning it.
Yeah, but it's all down to money.
But they should have got there. They
It's all down to the finances for Celtic, because they've exhausted every avenue in Scotland. They can't do any more than they can do. And Rangers to the same extent. They can do no more. It's so tight. It's so small up there. They're not going to get into the English Premier Division. They're not going to get into England. So that's where they're stuck. So Europe
but
is
the owners won't reinvest.
The Holy Grail.
The way we watched Celtic growing up when they were in with Henrik Larsson and Sutton and top players, they won't reinvest now to bring in top players because they're winning the league.
It's hard to get the players as well, Alan.
There you
go. It is hard to get them because
but they won't go there because of the way the league is, Johnny. That's what I'm saying.
It's hard to get them up there because the finances up in Scotland, the weather, all that stuff, it comes into play. And if you know, whatever about like the competition up there, there's no competition to Celtic and now there's Rangers. And if a fella has a choice to go to a Premier Division team,
absolutely,
if it's mid table or bottom table, he'll go Premier
Division.
What
about a top end Championship team? Okay, Johnny, your hits this week.
Look, I was up in Dundalk the other night and Patrick McElhenney was brilliant. He was back to his himself. Watched him, he came into the game after about 15 minutes and he just ran the show. He was back to, you know, he'd done everything in the game, scored a couple of goals, made goals, and I just enjoyed it. I enjoyed the match actually, and I enjoyed watching him. I thought he was brilliant.
They're a joy to watch at the minute, aren't they?
Yeah, touching on McElhenney, because he came on the second half against Slovan in Tallinn. I thought he played very well when he came on, which was
it's taking him a while to get going. I'm a huge fan, but I'd be disappointed with him.
He might just need a kick up the backside, you know. He might just need a little bit of a.
I've been very disappointed with him this year. He hasn't been nowhere near the level, and the other night he was at it, but. We mentioned Jack Byrne, Mandrew, they're all ahead of him at the moment in terms of what they're producing. But hopefully now that might kickstart him to the end of the season.
Is it harder though to be a star player in a team of better quality players? Whereas like Danny Mandrew stands out so much at Bowes because no disrespect to the players he's playing with. Likewise, Jack Byrne at Rovers. That for McElhenney to stand out in the Dundalk squad needs an even better.
I looked at the bench the other night for Dundalk. You're right. What you're saying that. You know, the Gannon on the bench, the Huben on the bench, the Mountney on the bench, I forget else.
The Cleary on the bench.
There's really another team on the bench.
There is something in that, Damien, but he's been nowhere near the level of what we expect from Patrick. We're all big fans, but he hasn't even been middle of the road. He's been ordinary for him.
The other way, Damien, is like when he's on it, he actually improves. Even very good players, he improves them all because he can, when he's on it, he can just
He's their go-to man, and he hasn't been delivering really. Jamie McGrath has emerged as their
filled out. I looked at Jamie again the other night. Physically he's filled out. Don't know if he's too big. Sometimes it takes that speed and agility over fellas, but he's really filled out.
Yeah, I think he's done really well, Jamie McGrath this year. But hopefully that kickstarts Patrick because we all love to watch him in full flight.
Dundalk 7 points clear with a game in hand over Shamrock Rovers? Dundee, the league now at this stage?
Yeah, it's up to Dundalk now. They, as I said, it's the only team that'll beat them is themselves, I think. You know, done their job the other night professionally against Finn Harps, saying that Finn Harps had a Russell sent off, silly second yellow card, but however. But
when it was only 1-0 at that
yeah,
stage.
Yeah, it was 1-0, but look, they're 7 points clear, and as you say, game in hand. Rovers got down the ward for tonight, tricky match. Rovers had a good win the weekend up in Derry, but I would say it's down to Dundalk themselves.
The flip side to Dundalk, I don't know if anyone has them. The European result last week is one of their misses of the week, but is there a question now of character, how you rebuild, how you refocus?
I think it's probably a broader discussion about, because they're going to win the league, it's probably about how do you approach Europe again next year. And the argument now is, do you bring in fellas from the outside? Do you bring in a better quality player? Because what's there will win them the league no problem here, or get them into Europe every year. But because it's becoming so much harder for the lesser nations or the smaller nations, which we are one, do you have to invest now in a better quality player to try and make that breakthrough? Because at the moment, the European stuff, we're light years away from the group stage.
Sorry, Anthony. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that even looking at Slovan Bratislava the other night, they had in the middle of the park David Holman, Austrian international, and he was excellent.
Like centre forward for $2 million or something, was it? Yeah.
Sporar, Slovenian international, the captain, centre half, Bozkov, Bulgarian international. Their best player in the first leg, the winger Moha, Moroccan winger, who was excellent in the first leg. He wasn't there for the second leg. He was sick. Didn't miss him.
But Anthony, no. I've had a discussion about this, is that Dundalk are probably where they're at. That's where we're at, right? But you're talking about Slovenians, you're talking about Moroccans. Other countries are able to bring these players in, and they're not the top players in Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've got, you talk about, Alan, about consistency. The consistency is to qualify for Europe every year and get that money in every year. And, you know, starting to bring players in, you bring one player in, and the more consistent you are in Europe, the easier it will be to get players to come on board here. But you've got to be able to do it at a consistent level every year. But I think also you need to have a little bit of luck. And I don't mean this in a bad way. Linfield are the only team that are still in Europe.
The draw was tough for Dundalk this year. That's fair, yeah.
Yeah, but Linfield beat the team that beats Slovan Bratislava.
George Hamilton was telling me it's the first time in
66 or 68
that they've won back-to-back European
See, obviously with the investors in now, Peak Six, they're looking at it from a financial point of view, thinking, like that, we'll win the league here, we'll qualify, we'll get our million or get whatever, a million and a half each year.
And you make your investment back relatively quickly.
But I think it's a dilemma for them now, Damien, because it's a question for them, how far do they want to take it? Do they actually want to speculate? And that's probably the question for them, because at the moment, looking at it with the squad Dundalk have, and as Johnny outlined even the bench the other night, they'll win the league here.
Comfortably.
Well, Shamrock Rovers might push them, but they should win it comfortably. But to get into that group stage, you probably are going to have to.
It's going to be easier next year. Does it? The format's changed for Europe next year.
Is that not 2021?
If Dundalk are where they are next year, I think they'll be into a group stage, a second tier stage. I'm nearly 100% on that.
But the point, I don't know if any of you read the Sunday Times yesterday. They had a report and an investigation into the leap of faith written by Sean Pollock. It's in the business section of the Sunday Times yesterday about the attractiveness of the League of Ireland. And it's, you know, you look at the parallels. Dundalk have a good ownership group. Shamrock Rovers have had a significant investment from Dermot Desmond as part of the link up with Celtic, that it is going to become a situation, Anthony, that the cream will rise to the top in tandem with what money has been invested externally.
It's already happening, Damien. I mean, you can see it, as the lads say, like Dundalk, maybe Rovers can challenge them over the next few years, but Dundalk are going to fully expect them to win it this year. And then it becomes a question of, no matter what way you put it with Dundalk, it's a gamble. If they start throwing money at it, like, where does it end? They might get knocked out in the first round.
You have to deal with properly. Sorry, Anthony. Your budget is your 500,000 is your first match.
Yeah.
And you have to budget it like that. And you say, that's it. That's all we have. Yeah. If we get, then you're on
then
the you're
then
on
you look
the
again.
See,
you
to be fair,
to be like
Johnny,
that.
As
sorry,
well,
Anthony,
to be fair to the owners, they've put a lot of money, actually. People might argue, they've done nothing with the ground. They haven't really put a lot into the squad.
It needs to be bulldozed, the place.
But they've done a lot in terms of the resources. Yeah. The off-the-field stuff for the preparation. They have a video room. They have a lovely setup up and all that stuff.
Gym and everything.
But this is where the question comes in for them now. Do they actually look at it and say, we actually need to just bring in a top-quality centre midfielder, top-quality forward, to make that breakthrough? That's probably the question.
If I was an agent now and I was trying to place Alan Cawley in a team in Europe, and you'd be saying, "Who's what teams in Ireland?" Yeah, Linfield are still in Europe. I mean, say Linfield because they're still. Then he might go and try and place Alan Cawley. So he plays Alan Cawley in Linfield and he does well. Then he plays somebody else in Linfield, or if it's Shamrock Rovers or Dundalk. And that'll take a little bit of time and a little bit of money to do that. But you were talking about Championship, Damien, a couple of minutes ago. I don't understand why someone would want to invest, say Sheffield Wednesday, right? A Championship team, and they'll invest, I don't know, X amount of
hundreds
millions.
Hundreds of millions, yeah.
Right? And Sheffield Wednesday will never make Europe. Why would you not invest it in Shamrock Rovers or St Pat's or Dundalk? Or
well, that's the view. Sorry, not to cut you off. Is the counter argument that if you invest 50 million in Sheffield Wednesday and you get into the Premier League, and even if you get a share of the TV revenue, and even you're if you're relegated, you'll make your investment back? Now, I know it's horses for courses.
Well, the argument for the piece yesterday, I mean, and the investors now, I think that's what Peak Six were looking at.
Mm.
You come in here. You'll easily make back your million or your million and a half. Oh, yeah. But do they just want to make a million, or do they want to get into the group stages and make 10 million? But to make the 10 million, you're probably going to have spend 2 or 3 million.
But at its core, like, you know, there's a famous saying about, you know, the best way to become a millionaire in the States is start off a billionaire and buy an NFL franchise, and you're just going to, you know, hemorrhage money. So somewhere along the line, are they going to look to cash in? You know, you look at
this
the flip
side. This is what
side.
We don't know. Like this is a question
did,
how...
Gareth Kelleher did great work at St. Pat's, but then once that ended...
Well, I think this is a question, like you started this conversation in with the whole Dundalk on the pitch, but I think it's a question now for those owners just to see how serious are they here? Are they here for just the short term, 2 or 3 years, pick up a million, 2 million? Are they actually here for the... But that's what I'm saying. Or are they here to say, no, we're going to be here 5 or 6 years and we're going to invest 2-3 million into the squad, whatever it takes, and we're going to make the breakthrough and we're going to get our 10 million back.
Look at the budget, say, the Cypriot teams had, you know, would have compared to Air League.
Look at Celtic's budget. Like, you know, they just, you know, they got dumped out by Cluj. You know, it's a major gamble to start.
It is a gamble,
you know? You think, oh, well, they pour 10 million into it. That actually wouldn't guarantee Dundalk anything.
Nothing will guarantee, But that is the question for them. Do you plough on into it? Or
the flip side then is you have to worry when the safety net goes.
Yeah, but if you do budget it properly and the safety net goes, that the fall is not too bad.
Yeah.
But the problem then is, and it gets back to the UCD scenario, it would be similar to that if you've a player with Dundalk or Shamrock Rovers, like Carrigan to the Cypriot team there, you know, someone might just come in and say, yeah, you've taken a chance on them. Now, you might make a few bob and making some money on them, but as soon as they get the opportunity to go to a higher league, for the want of a better word, the players will go. And that would be another problem as well.
And you can't blame them. No. Alan, your hits for the week.
The Bose one was probably my one, but because we've already touched on that.
Would you want to just go straight to your miss?
I've one hit. I'll give you a quick hit. Kieran Sadler being named in the squad last week, I think, is a really good positive. I always liked him when he was here. Good lad, good player. Type of player that will get you off the edge of your seat, exciting for the squad that we need. Now, whether he'll make the 23, I don't know, but just basing it on form alone, he's had a great start with Doncaster. I think he scored 3 goals already, and he's had a great start to the season, so he'd be my hit. And the miss is, and let's have a proper argument about this and a debate, the miss is the new handball rule. It's an absolute shambles. The goal that was given on Saturday against Man City, or disallowed for Jesus, was just, I despair of where football is going if these goals are disallowed. It was the same last week with Wolves and Bali. It's just incredible.
Well, this is the rule, Alan, because the Premier League actually tweeted it out when there was the whole Ferrari.
I've read
about
rules
it.
And rules and rules, Anthony.
So the rule is any goal scored or created with the use of the hand or the arm will be disallowed, even if it's accidental.
Oh, it's the worst I've ever heard.
And this is the, when people are giving out about VAR, I think a lot of people's actual issue is with the rule itself.
The one on Saturday was not a VAR issue. Even you look at the incident with the goalkeeper, Lloris, right? The ref would dim Michael Oliver and they're having a go at him. And he's a brilliant ref, Michael Oliver. And he's saying to the players, it's not me.
Yeah.
And he's pointing up to the screen, right? Yeah. Saying it's them. So then Lloris comes out to him and he says, what's going on here? And your man said, free. And Lloris going, to us? And he busts out laughing. He couldn't believe it. Nobody appealed for it, or nobody. And the problem with it, Damien, and this is the last thing I'll say, the problem with it is, Laporte went for the header. Two boys going for the header, completely accidental, right? If the defender had to hit it with his arm and a fall to Jesus and he scored, they weren't given a penalty. So the defender, that would have just been deemed accidental if it hit the defender, so it wouldn't have been a penalty. But yet, because it hits Laporte and it falls to Jesus and he scores, they're penalised because it leads to a goal. So you can't, like, it's just unbelievable.
VAR, in principle, brilliant. In practice, not quite what we thought it would be.
But that's it. It's the rule more so than VAR for okay. this one.
It's the interpretation of it, and you know, it's Saturday, that's for me, total mix up.
Sorry, absolutely. Well, as a qualified referee.
As you say.
In the referee's opinion.
In the referee.
So it's all subjective.
The rule is, sorry lads, we
spent 15 minutes on a corridor outside giving out about the sending off in the All-Ireland Hurling final.
But there's a rule we couldn't settle. Anthony, just for, that's the rule. It was same last week with Wolves. Fellow goes up for a header. Johnny coming up as a centre half, heads the ball. I'm not even looking at it. Hits me on the arm and it falls and Johnny puts
isn't
it in. That's disallowed.
Isn't it, if it's deemed to be a mistake by the official or it's not clear, isn't it?
Clear and obvious.
Clear and obvious. The issue is, there's only one person in the entire thing who knows definitively whether it was intentional or not.
Ah, come on.
That's the offending player. I did, but you're back to
the
other
problem
points.
I have with the likes of this rule now, and unless this is clamped out, the game, we all know the game is a bit of contact, a bit of argy-bargy, whatever goes on, right? And if you're unlucky that a ball hits a fella and falls to him and he scores, that's just the game. Mm. It's becoming so sterile now and so clinical that you're cutting out all that stuff.
There was a Man City fan on... was it TalkSport or 5 Live, one or the other, over the weekend. And he said that when goals go in now, he said your natural inclination is no longer to celebrate.
He
says you're waiting for VAR to tell you whether it's actually your goal or not. So
and you're right, Damien.
The emotion is gone.
Over the last few years, when fellas score goals, the first place they look was over to the linesman. And now it's, as you say, not going to celebrate.
But even moving away from the handball rule, which is, right, whatever you think of the rule, it's a defined rule. But there's still instances where they use VAR where it's still subjective.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's up to the person who's sitting in the room. Yeah. So even it can still be massively divisive.
It becomes Chinese democracy where you've got a fella who's obviously in the referee's ear going, I'm really not sure about this, Johnny. Just have another look at it there, Johnny. I'll just keep at you until you get the result.
We spoke about this loads, Damien, on the radio. And I've always been consistent. I think goal line technology is brilliant because it's black and white, right? Black goal or no goal. You can see it clearly. The offside, I had an issue with the Sterling one last week, his armpit. But generally,
it's like being a little bit pregnant.
Yeah, generally it's black and white. The offside is great, but when you're bringing it in for, as Anthony says, penalties, is it inside the box? Is out? And a fella's up in the box saying,
"If
VAR had
been here a few years ago, the FAI would be up and running, and we'd have lots of money because the Thierry Henry incident. We would have got away with that. We would have qualified and all that stuff." So,
I'm not a fan. I've never been a fan. Only for black and white, anything subjective, bin it.
You know, initially you were saying it'll take 30 seconds. Now it's taking longer and longer.
But funny enough, can I just ask a question around the table? Did anybody know about this handball rule before the season started?
I've never been clear on it the last couple of years.
I knew about it because I knew after the Champions League final and the Ferrari around that, that what was a handball last year wasn't going to be a handball this year.
I was reading a thing today where City have actually been incredibly unlucky with the VAR because...
The Champions League, man.
Llorente's goal would be ruled out.
Hit
his arm. Then before, when Liverpool knocked them out, they had a goal that was onside. Man City had a goal that was onside in the second leg that would have made it 2-0, but it was ruled out incorrectly. With VAR now, goal would have stood. And now, obviously, the one
is Pep and Aguero still talking. They had a bit of a...
come here. I always... like, these things happen. Now, they might happen in the dressing room. It's like when people go on about, Johnny McDonald and Anthony, who had a big punch up at training, as if it doesn't happen on a weekly basis.
What's his
basis.
Name, Hogan?
Aguero?
No, Chris...
Richie
Hogan. He just walked straight by. Cody didn't even look at him.
I know.
Anyway, that's another day's work.
But sorry, like, okay, what's your thoughts then on the Aguero-Pep spat?
I'd be more... I love Pep, but I just couldn't understand that you're taking Aguero off after only 64 minutes and you're going mad for a goal, and he's a great start to see. Now I know since he's come in he's always had a bit of he didn't work, and but he's turned all that around. He just seems to favour Jesus.
Johnny, as the only one of the three of us who has managed in the country's top league, how would you have reacted?
And Europe and international. I just want to throw that one in.
Anywhere else?
He's coaching you,
international. You've the international.
He's not a bad coach, Johnny McDonald.
If you know, you've got a plan, you've got a strategic plan. Sometimes the players will know, obviously, we might be making a change. He could have had an injury, or look, 2 years ago, he wanted Aguero out there, a year and a half ago, you know, and he obviously still hasn't got 100% faith in Aguero. And you know, when it's not nice to see that happening. You shouldn't get involved with a player coming off the pitch. You shouldn't. You can deal with it later on. But it's, you know, sometimes, most times, it does work. You know, you make the decision, you come out, you win the match, it works for you.
And then, well, yeah, Gary Neville referenced in the commentary, I don't know if you're watching it, Damien, that when Jesus scored the goal, Guardiola turned around to the dugout and just basically stood in front of Aguero and said, "Now,
I told you so."
Stared at him.
That's a bit childish. And then Aguero, as well. Aguero, that is very childish.
Yeah. Aguero, yeah, from him it is. Aguero came up then, was hugging him on the sideline. We all saw that. Yeah. And then it's this.
The whole thing was like a soap opera. It was brilliant because they had the row. Then Jesus scores the winner. Then they're hugging and kissing on the line, and then it's ruled out.
Maybe Amazon are doing another documentary.
Now on City as well. They're playing against. I'm actually tipping Spurs to maybe overtake Liverpool this year, and they're the only two, Spurs and Liverpool, that'll touch City. They absolutely annihilated Spurs the other day. Like, it's scary to think what they're doing to the third best team in the Premier League. Like, there was an article in the paper today I was reading that one of the reporters in England reckons they were so good they're going to hit someone for 10 this year.
Let's go back to the League of Ireland, boys.
Right. we talked a lot about UCD, obviously, at the top of the programme. Just a word on Bohemians. 49 points, 3 clear of Derry, 2 goals better off in terms of points difference. That actually could end up being the battle this year.
It will keep us going until the end.
They
had a couple of defeats, Bohs, in recent weeks. So it was important to get back up and got the points, you know. Because Derry were definitely creeping and Pats were creeping into the equation, and if Bohs don't get to Europe this year, I think it'd be, I won't say a disaster for them, but there's just so much hype about the club, so much positivity about the club. People see what's happening around. The lads have obviously doing a good job there, but yeah, they need to get to Europe this year for the financial aspects of it as well.
Pats are only 6 points back. You were at Pats the other night.
I was in Richmond, Damien, and again, it's a funny one because we're starting off the. I was doing co-commentary and we're chatting about it, and I've mentioned Pats a few times how disappointing a season it's been, and it has, because there was a lot of hype about them at the start. Signed obviously very well, we all thought, with Forrester, McCabe, none of them even involved the other night, and it just hasn't panned out the way we all kind of thought it would. Yet looking at the table right now, and after them winning the other night, they're only 6 points off Bohs, and they've given themselves a squeak.
It'd be the time to go on a bit of a run now. This would be the time.
And in fairness to them, I thought the first half 20 minutes it was like a pre-season friendly. It was dreadful, both sides. Then Sligo scored, and if anything, Sligo probably will be disappointed that they didn't win 2 or 3 up. They had a couple of chances on the break, but in fairness to Pats, whatever Harry did say to them at half time, they were very, very good in the second half, and they completely dominated the whole second half, responded really well, got 2 good goals. The young lad McCauley, who they've brought back from Liverpool, scored a great goal, and he looked very lively on the night. For all the disappointment the Pats fans have suffered all year with them being so inconsistent, they've given themselves a squeak.
But there's still that flakiness though, that okay, back to back wins coming off the back of back to back losses, that, you know, like you said, How do you as a manager ensure that the norm now becomes the momentum of those back to back wins?
You reinvent the season now. You start the season now and you say, this is the start of the season for us. Put everything behind you and you just think forward, and you take all the positives that you can. And the next match is the most important match, whether it's a league match, a league cup match, or an FAI cup match. You know, they've got a good draw as well in the FAI cup, haven't they? You've got UCD as well. Yeah, so they beat Bray, they got UCD, so that'll give them a bit more momentum. But for me, if it was me, I would just say, right, put everything behind us now, let's go forward.
I think it's fair to say as well.
Let's try them in every game.
I think it's fair to say as well, and I've said this a few times, and even looking at the game the other night, bar Dundalk, Rovers and Bohs, and Derry have done well, I think the rest of them is much of a muchness.
Yeah, I think it was this time last year Bohs went on that amazing run. So like, it'd be interesting to see how they kick on now, because they got a right shot in the arm beating Shells, and I think it'd be just reward
to see.
But
the nature of it as much as the result itself.
I think it'd be just reward for Keith Long to get to a cup final this year.
I was so disappointed they didn't get to the cup final last year. I thought they would have brought so much energy, so much hype to the, just for the PR of it, everything. And I was really disappointed. But I'd be disappointed if they don't get to Europe as well this year.
Do you give them a chance in Dundalk tonight?
I think so, yeah. I think so. It's
important that it's not always Dundalk and Cork. Like, you know, desperately, we need, irrespective of who it is, we need
Dundalk and Cork this year, don't
we? We need someone to break through.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at it with the way the draw is. I think it'd be Rovers, Dundalk. Well, Dundalk have a tricky game up in there in the FAI Cup, so it's a tricky game. But it looks like it could be Rovers, Dundalk, Pats and Bowes, four semi-finals, something like that.
Very quickly, just to run through the other results, Shamrock Rovers 2-0 winners away to Derry.
Big win. Good win for them.
Derry are going well. That's
no
a great
goals
win.
Again. A good win for them up there.
Cork City, again, you don't know what Cork is going to turn up at the minute. 2-1 winners away to Waterford, which is one of those places, you know, we talk notionally about difficult places to go.
Well, Waterford are playing Rovers tonight now as well, so that might be a difficult one for Rovers tonight, with Waterford taking a defeat off Cork.
How big a dent was the European thing to Waterford in terms of mindset and momentum?
I think
starting
it was a big
out for
dent
the season.
To the owner.
Just a psychological
the
thing.
Owner, because he looked at this. He was probably coming at it with the angle when he took over at the start, like the Peak Six thing, that if I invest a few quid here, the chances of us getting into the top four are fairly good, that I don't have to invest a whole pile of money. They got promoted winning the league handy enough by bringing in two or three players. Then he invested again. And when they get into the Premier League without spending a fortune, and as I was saying a minute ago, bar the top two or three, it's much of a muchness, you've a good chance. That was huge for him, Damien. And he thought by getting to Europe, Alan Reynolds done great. They thought we'd be in Europe, I might make a few quid, and then bang, they're gone.
Bastian Harry as well. Really, as a consequence of that,
the lad Doofus up front, the goalkeeper went back to Swindon, that was great for them last year. So, and they didn't bring anyone in. And even speaking to Alan Reynolds, he's had no support from upstairs at all this season, because I think the owner's on the verge saying, here, good luck.
You can't blame him though.
Well, I think he felt let down, because I think, you know, he presumed that they were going
to
be in Europe.
Yeah, and there seem to be mixed messages. Yes, is what think, we've let's not go back yeah, over rake over the coals of yeah, who said what to who and everything else.
But I think you're right, the talking about Waterford, Damien, sorry, I think once that happened, I just think it knocked the stuff in him, the plug was pulled away and he lost direction.
Yeah. Right, you mentioned earlier Kieran Sadler, one of those uncapped players called up in a 40-man provisional squad. Like, again, we get so excited about, Anthony, I'll throw this at you, players that get called into these provisional squads, and, you know, it was a Padraig Amond a couple of months back tweeting how proud he was and then doesn't make the reduced squad. That I know why they do it, but it's frustrating that this is going to get cut down and probably all the good talking points will be taken away from us.
Yeah, I mean, the Troy Parrott was the headline, and then you're talking about the likes of Kieran Satterley. Realistically, although I'd love to see Troy Parrott make the final squad personally, but, you know, realistically he's not going to bring them, so you're kind of thinking, well, what is the point really? But
it's a fair enough assessment to say, if you're not playing first team football for your club, are you good enough to play international football?
Well, it is if...
Like, let me rephrase that.
There's a big difference in not playing for Spurs first team. Is
an under-23's Premier League form line strong enough to propel you into an international squad?
I think anyone who's watching Troy Parrott over the last couple of years, he has so much talent that you'd have to... There must be at least a seed in your mind thinking, is he actually better than what we have?
Because you see the goal he got Friday, Anthony?
Yeah,
but
is that
not the reason to bring him into the training squad, to see what he does against those players?
He's in Spurs training squad. He's been in tour with Spurs pre-season.
You know, Harry
Kane came on for him. Like, he's a good... I know the young player. He's with us in Belvedere, so I know the lad. And his mindset is very good. He's very mature for his age. Physically, he's very good. But he's still only a boy. He's still only 17. You know, so we're putting a lot on top of him as well, but he takes it in a stride, I have to say.
The thing that drives me demented in terms of pressure, and we've had this on the radio, you get people clamouring for him to play who've never seen him play.
It's funny you say never seen him play. Do you know who hasn't seen him play? Mick McCarthy. Yeah. Well, I couldn't believe it. He came out the other day and he says, I haven't seen him play yet. Now, that might be down to pre-season games and not being able to whatever, but surely to God, when he was taken over, he knew the hype of this young fella.
But if he's
go see him.
What could be an important clarification, he hasn't seen him play live.
Yeah.
But how hard is it to jump in a car or a train and go down to watch a match?
When he made it to Crystal Palace to see James McCarthy, who's also in the squad.
Well, these are the forwards that were named, Damien. Callum Robinson, Scott Hogan, Shane Long, Michael Obafemi, Dave McGoldrick, James Collins, Aidan O'Brien, Troy Parrott, Sean Maguire. So
who would you have in ahead of him? Yeah.
So you'd have him ahead of, you'd have Parrott ahead of Collins at Luton or whoever.
Some of them are scoring. Hogan has scored, hasn't he? They're scoring a couple of goals in the lower leagues, obviously. But this guy is playing at a... Harry Kane came on from in a pre-season friendly.
The goal he scored Friday night, Johnny? A cracker.
He played against Juventus. He's playing at a high level. Granted, it was only pre-season, but he's playing at a top level. And more importantly, He's training with Spurs at a top quality level. That's as good as international as you can
get. I'd be with Johnny too, in the sense that he's only a kid too. You have to mind him. And I think that's why under Pochettino, he'll be well looked after and well minded. He doesn't, and there's no real need for him to just throw him in willy nilly when he has Kane and the rest of them. And I think he'll mind him and look after him, Johnny, which is important because you can't be throwing everything on a 17 year old.
When you look at a 40 man squad, it's very hard to look at names of players who should be in there who aren't in there. Anyone?
I can't think. Off the top of my head, I can't think.
Like, unless you're going,
I thought this 40 man squad was a Martin O'Neill thing.
But you see, like, Johnny, you might be able to educate me here. My understanding is they name the extended squad so that clubs are aware for the potential for players to be absent, particularly down the lower leagues, if it comes to the need to get games that rescheduled, that the clubs have to be notified so that if...
But I have to say, you don't probably need to name 40, but you could absolutely make contact with the clubs. You could absolutely make contact with the player and say, look, you're doing great. We have an eye on you. We're getting you watched every week.
You're on our standby list.
Absolutely. So make sure you're ready to go. If I need you, you'd be ready to go. And then you're saying to the club, look, he's not in the 25-man squad, but he could be brought in. So
from a coaching aspect, Johnny, would you name 23 and have a 5-man standby? Or
would you name 30 and then reduce it?
You only need 11 for 11.
But then you're going to have injuries, so you need 22. You need a few extra hanging around.
You can only
play
11. Okay. You can always bring a fella in. You can always bring someone up to 21s. You keep it tight. It's, you know, are you sending out mixed messages? I'm not saying that about Mick, but 40 is too many. It's
now, he did say, McCarthy, football, that those lads will go and play up to 21s, which I think is a good thing as well.
Sensible.
Yeah.
How optimistic are we about the Switzerland game?
Oh.
It's tough.
This is the real business. You're into senior hurling now.
And if, in fairness to McCarthy, like, 10 points out of 12, he's given them every chance going into the games now.
There was a real downer after the Gibraltar game because it was awful, to be fair. But that game was a kind of one of them where you just needed to get through it. It was like two or three weeks after the end of the season.
Some of the players hadn't played competitive football for
you're in a known situation. You win 7-0, you're expected to win 7-0.
Mick could be gone. When did Mick get brought in? November? So Mick could be gone by January.
He's only four games left.
Yeah.
Whether we qualify or not, all this thing comes up again. Like, Stephen's going to be in place no matter what, and in the next.
The only person who can stop that happening is Stephen.
He's not going to. Why would he?
It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
No, why would he?
No, well, it's I think when looking at the campaign, it was always going to be just a sprint for Mick, and could he get us qualified regardless of how we do it. Like, this talk of philosophies and the way style of play, it means nothing when it comes to just 8 games to get us there, no matter how we get there. So 4 games already, he's given them a chance. The Denmark, the tough games now coming up, Switzerland, Denmark, and this will decide it then.
But if you could get a result at home against Switzerland,
I think I would fully expect a much improved performance. I think we'll be far better. I think it will suit Ireland, the fact that there's less pressure on them now.
They don't have as much as the ball either. You play better when you're
up against better opposition too and stuff. You up your levels.
I disagree, John,
you should up your levels for every match.
No, but I mean the Gibraltar one, Johnny, was just a no-win situation.
But I would. I have to be honest, I can't see Ireland getting anything out of the game, because I think probably playing the best team in the group.
Is it defeatist to say you'd take the draw against Switzerland at home and then wait until those games in October, get a result against Georgia? Like,
you've got to stay in the group. You've got to stay in the hunt.
We're 5 points clear of Denmark with a game in hand. So like a draw.
That's a hell of a cushion.
And we have to play them at home.
They have 2 Georgia games, don't they?
Yeah, they do. But we do have them in Dublin. It's the only thing, you know, got a point over there. So,
but like, you look at those back-to-back, okay, home to Switzerland now, we're not involved in the second round of games now. Yeah. We've got Georgia away from home the 12th of October, and then Switzerland away from home on the 15th.
Mm. Yeah, they're tough games coming up now.
And the second, you know, and from my experience, like, talking about squads, you've Georgia first and then you've Switzerland, so... You've got to make sure you get your result against Georgia. So you're putting all your energy and your focus on that first match. You're looking at a bit of luck, but, you know, fellas getting injured and whatever else, then you're going into the big game. So do you balance around, say, do we push it up? No, you go and you try and get your 3 points and see what happens. But then you're coming into a game 3 days later, 4 days later.
I think the one you said there, would we take a draw? I don't think we're in a position to say, okay, would we take this or take that. I think you have to just
Think we're in the position either to win 4-3. We're not that type of team. We're a 1-0 or a 2-1, and that's a 1-all job.
How, from personal experience, how different is the challenge of international management? Like, you know, you don't, you're not going to improve the players in the time that
you
have them.
No, but you've got to make sure when you get them in that the detail of what you're doing is so important.
So there's far more homework involved.
Absolutely.
For when you and Brian were with the Faroes.
It's about the detail. It's about what you do, how you do it, where you do it, who does it, and all that. So it's not about coming in and training and doing lovely sessions and passing drills and all that. It's about using and maximising the time that you have, because you don't have that much time, that the players know exactly their roles, their jobs, and what they need to do when they're coming on, when they're coming off, and what they need to do if you lose a man, if they lose a man. You've got to have all that detail.
How much communication would you have had with those players outside of the international windows?
Well, from
nothing. Sorry, and I don't mean to be disrespectful of the Faroes, but is it different what you could have done with them, say, than what McCarthy can do with?
He can't do it because they're tied up with clubs.
But can you send a fella a text and say, "Here,
absolutely,
watched you last weekend. I thought you were great, but look at doing this instead."
Or you might say, "Do you remember that run you made in the match against Spurs?" That's the run we're talking about for the international team.
Because it's a good question.
Thank you.
The player I'm thinking of is Hendrick, because he's been played all over the place, right? So, but if you have a system set up, so say you and Brian with the Faroes, and you're saying, okay, we've Anthony in the middle, he's a defensive midfielder, but yet his club manager is playing him wide right, and you're saying to yourself, like, the position we want him, we see him as a defensive midfielder, we want him in there, but yet the manager is playing him wide right or whatever out there. How hard is it then for you to get a fella when he comes into your squad and say, look, I know at club level your man's playing out there, but I see it as this.
But once it's clear and concise for him, once he knows where his role is, like, he leaves
us. But would you have no problem going against where the club manager is playing him?
There's no point playing him if he doesn't fit into your system. Yeah. You need him to fit into that system, as you say, he's a holding midfielder. And as I said, that he knows his role is clear and concise. You might be putting him in there because he's a more experienced player than the rest of the players you might have around him, or whatever it might be. His range of passing might be better, his tackling. But once he knows coming in that he leaves his Liverpool bag out there and he brings his international bag inside the door, and the roles are clear and concise. And I think that's important.
When we talked about the League of Ireland, I neglected to lead you down the avenue of the First Division. So to finish very briefly, if we could, on the First Division. Shelburne, 2-0 winners away to Longford. They're now 5 points clear of Drogheda. There's a further 3-point gap back to Longford Town. 3 games to go in the season.
They're coming around.
Massive win, Damien, win. Because Drogheda won 6-0 the night before. And had they lost Shelburne against Longford, both Drogheda and Longford would have been breeding down their necks, only 2 points behind them. So the gap of 5 now they still have to play Drogheda and Bray a couple of tough games, but that should see them home now.
Do you know what I think done them a favour? I think the loss to Bowes done them a favour, because they might have lost the focus on the league or in the FAI Cup. Who are we getting in the next round? And I think, you know, I know they're delighting to beat Bowes, it would have been a great victory, but what they brought to Daily Mount that night, the fans, and what they're going to bring to the Premier League is going to be great. In the initial season, if they go up, and I do hope they go up, because there's a lot of good people there, put in a lot of hard work over the last few years, and the fans have stuck by them over in the First Division. The crowds have been decent enough, but I just think they're going to bring something really, really good to the league if they go up.
Second for, if Drogheda finish second, that's a very good season for them as well.
Brilliant.
Tim Clancy's done really good job the last 2 years.
It's so stacked against you though to try and come up having not finished as champion. I think we've talked about this off air before.
Drogheda were fourth last year, so they had to come through. They would have had to come through three two-legged games, which was beyond them. They did well to finish fourth. This year they actually progressed and got better, which against the odds, to be honest, because they lost some players and it's a very limited budget down there. So to finish a close, reasonably close second to Shells, which it looks,
squad, you know,
they spent a fortune. You're right, Anthony.
Yeah. So because I thought Shells were going to walk
everybody
away.
Everybody thought.
First division terms, he spent a fair bit. Alan, you're right. They have. Yeah.
Can I play devil's advocate?
Who's he?
Yeah, and I appreciate that UCD might go down, and UCD are probably the favourites at this stage to go down. So you would swap a Dublin club for a Dublin club.
Yeah.
But does the Premier Division, are we not veering dangerously back towards the situation where the top flight is just?
Well, I think Shelburne bring a whole lot more than what UCD will bring in terms of fans and off the pitches, all the things Johnny outlined there.
So it's
and the fact that
having one of the big clubs of Irish football back in the Premier Division outweighs any geographical fallback.
I think so, because you do want the geographical spread, that's fair enough, and you're right about that. But if it's a choice between Shelburne and UCD, it will be Shelburne all day long. And with the investor that's in there at the moment, you would like to think if they do come up, which they should, they'll probably reinvest another few quid, Johnny, maybe, and go at it. And And they could be competitive next year, shall we?
If Drogheda could come up, Drogheda could come up in the playoffs if they're where they're at as well. So you've got the Drogheda Dundalk factor up there as well. So
we need a bit of that, don't we? A bit more.
Yeah, but I think, well, like Finn Harps, you've got Finn Harps Sligo and Derry up in the northwest. So that gives it, it generates a bit of revenue for them up there as well. And look, it's a hard balance. It's a hard one to call.
I'd give Drogheda a chance against Finn Harps. Okay. By the way,
how good would a Bowes Shells Premier Division derby be in the redeveloped Dalyman Park?
If I live
long enough to see it,
you know. Look, in fairness, I don't
intend on going anywhere anytime soon.
Did you read the Twitter thread from the Dutch guy who went to that game? Yeah. The Bowes game, it was fantastic. Oh. This Dutch fellow was just on holidays in Dublin, and he went to Dalymount. He didn't really know much about the game or anything, and he tweeted a great thread about it, just saying this is unbelievable, you know, brilliant.
Would he pay for the flares for the fines for Joe McLeod?
He chronicled the whole story. it was brilliant from start to finish.
But isn't that good? Isn't that a good feedback that it's there? You know, it's not too long ago that Shelbourne were selling out Lansdowne Road or the Aviva, whatever you want to call it now, and you know, it's not too long ago they were able to do that.
Alan played in those games. She ever told you those stories?
Johnny was my coach. Johnny was after me.
That's how we went downhill.
Alan Colley.
Never tell you about the day he brought us to the airport and he was teaching us how to drive.
Tell you.
Go on.
He can do anything, that man.
Tell you. Sorry, go on, tell us.
To this day, I still know how to do reverse the car.
Go on, tell us.
Go on.
You have. I promised him he'd be out by 90 seconds from now.
I'm on my way to the RSC.
Yeah. I'm reversing the car. You never look at your near mirror, you always look at the opposite mirror. And you don't even have to look at mirrors, you just reverse it in.
Lock it round. I haven't a clue what he's talking about, Damien.
And I still do
you have
to
no
this
recollection
day.
Of bringing no him to the airport.
It's obviously a big lie. We're obviously trying to take his focus off the game, or else we were preparing him. We were going to tell him he wasn't playing or something.
Alan Colley, thank you for your company.
Pleasure, Damien.
Johnny, thank you for your company. Anthony, thank you for your company as well. From Damien O'Mara, it'll be Chad again. Good luck.